It's the Cougar Fan Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 198. I am your host, Adam Mangum. Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News joins us to share with us what he learned from fall camp, and as always, shed some light on recruiting news. Matt and I then talk about women's soccer, men's basketball trip to Spain, and Robert and I playing with fire. Then it's our season preview extravaganza with bold predictions galore. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Check us out on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. Get us on iTunes and get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. Welcome back to the podcast.
Always good to be with you.
So we'll start off with today. We're recording this on Wednesday evening. Today was officially the last day of fall camp for the football team, and obviously preparation for game one in Nebraska is what's next up for their agenda. Looking back at fall camp, for your perspective, what are the one or two biggest things that we learned about this team in fall camp?
In my mind, I said before fall camp that the one player to watch for me, and I think maybe the most significant players with regards to development, is Harvey Longy. In that, in the 3-4 defense, the inside backers play such an important role. That's the reason why Bronco went to the 3-4 defense, was because of the strength of his existing inside backers way back when. So when you look at the inside linebackers, Harvey Longy's got to be that guy. He's extremely athletic. He's got the personality. I think he's really risen to become what coaches anticipate that he would be. Of course, he has to put it on the field now. But at most practice sessions, he's loud. He's getting guys' faces. And he's the leader. He's a guy that players really seem to gravitate toward. And I think with his development, that's going to be huge for what was just an awful defense last year to become more like the defense we've come to know under Coach Bronco Mendenhall. So defensively, I point to him. And then offensively, I think the development of Nick Kurtz has really been significant. And you don't want a starter like Mitch Matthews to be out of fall camp, but then you look at what Taysom Hill has been able to develop with Nick Kurtz. I don't know if that happens if Mitch Matthews is practicing every day. In fact, I don't think there's any way that it would have. He has such a good connection with Mitch Matthews. And you talk to Mitch, he's like, yeah, I've been through all these practice sessions. I'm going to be fine. Missing 2 weeks, I'm good. But with Nick Kurtz, he's really become a go-to guy. Coach Unai in an interview said he wants guys that can start the offense, that guys that can just make plays immediately to kind of inspire everyone else. And
right.
And I think Nick Kurtz is becoming that guy. So I think with him paired with Mitch Matthews on either side, it could be a really big thing for this offense.
So when you look at, speaking of Kurtz in particular, and we'll get to some further thoughts on Lange here in a moment, but when you look at Kurtz, I mean, is it out of the realm of possibilities, assuming health for both of these individuals, that Kurtz has a more productive season than Matthews? Or do you think Matthews, assuming he's healthy, will still be the top dog, but Kurtz provides maybe a little bit more depth than BYU had last season?
Well, I think the fact that we're putting this in the realm of possibility, and I think it's definitely in the realm of possibility, is an exciting thing for this offense. It's hard to say. I mean, usually you have a good feel for this team and what's going to happen during practice sessions, but I've yet to see Matthews paired with Kurtz on either side of the ball for a significant period of time. So assuming Mitch Matthews is healthy, which I believe he will be, and it's going to be a battle. I mean, all we heard off season was how connected Taysom Hill is with Mitch Matthews, and I believe that will continue. But now he's really spoken out that same sort of connection with Nick Kurtz. So I guess I'm kind of trying to weasel out of this question. but I just point to just being significant that it is a legitimate question, being an exciting thing for this offense.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. On Lange's side, I mean, last year the play of the linebackers, both youth and injury, was not up to the standard that BYU had pretty consistently since Bronco Mendenhall's been the coach, and especially, as you mentioned, since they switched to the 3-4 defense. Is this a from your observations from the camp, do you feel like that group is solidifying, or do you think there's still a lot left to prove as to whether a very talented and highly recruited group ends up producing what we thought they'd be capable of producing?
There's a lot to prove, absolutely. You can't look at last year's play and just think that these guys are going to be fine and just plug it in. You hope it, and I think the talent's there. And I think one thing that's really significant with the linebackers is they've never really rotated between outside and inside before. They're going to do that with at least one guy, and Jeremiah Luetta-Doyer, who we refer to as JLD for obvious reasons, but he's been rotating between outside and inside fairly consistently, and you saw at times where even Harvey Long, he was playing on the outside in this last scrimmage, and I think it serves two purposes. It just implements your depth so that you have better depth and that you can just plug in guys with more than just your basic 2-deep roster, where you can have two guys be the primary backup at two positions. And also, as far as disguising against what they're presenting, the hope is to get maybe a better pass rush, not knowing where Harvey Long is going to be lining up. With that aspect, I think it's very interesting that BYU's moved in that direction, and we'll see how it works out. And I think there's a lot of questions to be answered in the secondary as well. So
yes,
yeah, certainly. And they're going to be tested early,
yes.
Very early.
Yes.
So we're going to find out pretty fast exactly what this defense is. Last year, you didn't really see it. You were kind of wondering, even after the Virginia game, it's like, oh, maybe it's just an off game. No, that they have problems. I think we're going to know immediately where this defense is.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Switching back to the offensive side of the ball, obviously the storyline that kind of shook up the fan base was Jamal Williams not participating this year. Sounds like he'll be back for his senior year next year. But that kind of puts the Cougars in a precarious position. From my perspective, I was worried about running back depth with the healthy Jamal Williams. Do you think that's overblown? Do you think these guys can carry that load? Or do you think an injury or some ineffectiveness is going to make this team a little bit too much dependent on Taysom's legs and arms?
Well, in that realm, I think significant developments has been Adam Heaney, first and foremost. I think he's been able to practice consistently, and if he can stay healthy, he's really close strong. He had a really good scrimmage last time out, and if he can just become that dependable guy that can do everything in the backfield, that's gonna prove huge dividends. And the other guy that Bronco just keeps on mentioning is Francis Bernard, a freshman from Harriman High School, who's really, really filled up the slack for an injured Talawai Ho-Ching at the other, I guess his best termed as a fullback. A guy that I saw a lot in high school. He's a guy that can definitely carry the load. He ran for a lot of yards for Harriman, And when Bronco consistently highlights an offensive player, I think that speaks pretty loudly, and that you can believe that this kid really is doing good things out there.
Yeah. And we'll get back to football recruiting here in a bit, but thought I'd get your thoughts, as you covered a lot of these guys as they were coming into the BYU program on the basketball side. The men were in Europe, in Spain, playing games that I'm not sure how good the competition was, but it did get us a chance at least to find out a little bit about who Dave Rose took, but also who played and how well they did. I was curious to get your thoughts on the difference between, say, the big man rotation last year, which was pretty shallow, especially after Nate Austin got hurt. Is this just going to, because of these post players that have some offensive ability, is this basically going to be a completely different offensive team than what we saw, which was 95% perimeter based last season?
Yeah, I think so, without a doubt. You bring in guys like Kyle Davis, and from what I understand, Jamal Hayes is looking really good. As far as just being an option, you assume Corbin Kafuzi is really going to develop some low post moves. I don't know how good it'll be yet, but he's going to be better than last year. I think you can bank on that fact, and just with those three guys alone, That's going to be potentially huge for this team. just having that inside presence. And that the team really suffered from that last year, the lack of some go-to inside guys. It was a very much a perimeter team. You're still going to see a perimeter team. That's what Rose likes to do. But inside, I think it's the guy on the offensive end to watch, and then guys like Corbin Cafus and Kyle Davis on the defensive end, as far as just being a true post presence that can defend effectively on the low post. And yeah, I don't see how you can say it's not a positive for BYU. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think one of the fun things about last season was of course, following the human triple-double and Kyle Collinsworth. Do you think, he's not going to average, he's not going to be second in the WCC in rebound again, is he, with the post presence we have? Is that going to, better for the team, but maybe not as many triple-doubles for Collinsworth?
Yeah, maybe, potentially. I you kind of caught me off guard. I'm in football mode. thinking about the basketball team. But,
well, it's closer than we think, right? I mean, basketball season's, they'll be firing up soon. But I just thought, last season he had to be the rebounding presence because there just wasn't much else there. So flipping back to football, but on the recruitment side, one of the big news that came out this week was that Fred Warner's brother Troy, a 4-star safety, had decommitted from Oregon and that BYU was a possibility. Is that one you think that BYU would be a big coup for BYU to get a 4-star, highly talented guy like him? And do you think having his brother in the program is an advantage or neutral to him potentially picking the Cougars?
Oh, it'd be huge. It's no secret. The biggest, the hardest position for BYU to recruit is defensive back. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think you have to say that's directly related. You see what Fred Warner's been able to become just through practice sessions. Of course, he has to prove it on the field. Very positive about the program. Really seems to be succeeding in the program and making some good gains. And his parents have been very vocal that they would love to see their sons play together at the next level. And you see Troy Warner post pictures of himself at the Big Blue Bash in Southern California and all that. And, BYU's going to be a player for him. Those family ties, and considering he's LDS, BYU's got to be in the picture. And I figure with a kid like Troy Warner, BYU does some damage this year. Goes 10-2 at least, and beats these big schools. I feel it's very likely that they could end up with a guy like Troy Warner, which is a guy. I mean, can you name the last quarterback BYU had that was able to play 4 years and play effectively for 4 years? I can't think of one.
Gosh, off the top of my head, Brandon, you've stumped me completely. I can't. I mean, I can think of some really good ones, but some of the best ones that BYU's had either had to be developed over time or were JC transfers, I'm thinking of Brian Logan as an example on that side. I can't off the top of my head think of a single one that freshman through senior year was an impact player, or even 3 years for that matter. It's a tough position. It's a tough position for BYU to recruit. As you look at that 2016 class, obviously you and I have talked about this on the podcast many times before, that BYU gets a lot of commits that don't waver particularly, and obviously they have a list already of committed players from both in and outside of Utah. As you look at that list of commits or folks that you think may end up committing, who are the one, or two players that when we end of the day, it may be 6 years from now with missions, but at the end of the day we look back and go, those are the players that either won or lost this class being impactful for BYU?
The player that I love from the 2016 class, and I've seen him play live, I've watched this film, is Jaren Hall from Maple Mountain. He's a guy, Kalen Hall's son, obviously a great athlete, a guy that could probably make a very strong bid to play professional baseball. He's a very good baseball player, good basketball player. I wouldn't say great basketball player, but football, I remember seeing his first game, and I was expecting to see kind of an athletic type that could do a lot of things, trying to play quarterback, right? And it wasn't that case at all. He's a very, very polished quarterback. relative to what high school quarterbacks are at that stage, but he can drop back. He's got a very good arm, and he's better defined as a very good quarterback who happens to be a good athlete. So considering the system BYU currently runs, and considering how good he is technically, I think he could be an outstanding player for BYU in the future. It's going to be a long time, as it is with all LDS BYU recruits. He's going to be a senior this year. So yeah, I mean, just think about how long we've had to wait for Tanner Mangum.
Yeah,
to put it in perspective.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Tanner Mangum at the photo day, because we can't talk to him until the season starts. And we're just thinking, man, I covered you at the Elite 11 4 years ago. That was four years ago.
Yeah.
when all that went down, when he was there with Jameis Winston. You look at what Jameis Winston's been able to do since. Yeah, Tanner Mangum was right there with him. So it takes a long time for these guys to file through. But Jaren Hall is a kid that I really, really like a lot as a future quarterback for the program.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I don't know that the fans are as revved up about him going into his senior year as they were about Mangum, but certainly somebody we're all going to be watching. Get you out on one last question, because you brought up Mangum and him coming back from his mission. Of course, we're all hoping and assuming that Taysom will be healthy throughout the season, but I've had several guests on where I've asked them, well, who's the backup? Everybody says it's Mangum 100%. First, do you agree with that assessment? Sounds like you do. But second, if there was a repeat of last year and early in the season Hill went down, do you think Mangum is ready, or do you think there'd be a pretty steep learning curve from a kid coming straight off his mission to back onto the football field?
Not as steep as I anticipated going in. Like how I view missionaries, and I've seen them come back, is you just throw out the first year. They're not going to be ready. It just don't consider anything. But I think it's really significant that he was able to come back and look as good as he has. He's a guy that's put in the work, a guy that really dedicates himself. When you're compared to John Beck in the film room and how much work you do outside, that's a very good thing. Because I don't think anyone worked harder than John Beck at just honing his craft and becoming the quarterback he is. And that's the comparison coaches draw with Tanner Mangum. First year back, you'd hope you don't have to put too much on that kid, because just going out there and being the guy, it can set you back. It really can. You'd like to see Taysom Hill finish healthy, but then what else? What other options do you have besides Tanner Mangum? You got Bo Hodge, a true freshman, a guy that's going to be at least behind the curve as Tanner Mangum is, and then McCoy Detmer, who looks all of probably 5'8", 150 pounds. I don't think he's the guy either. So it has to be Mangum, and we'll see. He's exceeded expectations so far, and I think that's important. He's managed to be ahead of the curve. So, yeah, let's just hope Taysom Hill's healthy and we don't have to see him until next year.
Yeah,
would
yeah.
Be the best thing for everyone, everyone concerned.
I think so. I'm hopeful that the first snaps taken by a quarterback but not named Taysom Hill are against UConn or Wagner because of a blowout, not out of necessity. Well, Brandon, thanks for coming on the podcast. Of course, we'll encourage folks to check out you and the other great staff at the Deseret News for football and basketball coverage of the Cougars and recruiting. And we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Great. Always a pleasure to be on with you guys.
Matt, it's episode 198 of the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. I have a statement that I want to make, and I want to get your opinion on it.
So real quick, though, this is a statement you're making, or this is a statement somebody else made and you want my reaction to it?
No, this is a statement I am going to make. It is my opinion.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm prepared.
Brace yourself. Tom Cruise is the greatest movie star of our lifetime. Discuss.
Oh boy. I'm sorry.
You're
I'm not
sorry. Like I
don't
understand
love Tom
what
Cruise.
That means.
I don't love Tom Cruise like you do. Like, okay, so here's my question for you. You put Tom Cruise on the what's the scale? And it's the Jim McMahon. Who's on the other end of the scale?
Riley Nelson.
Riley
to
Nelson.
Ty Detmer.
Ty Detmer scale. Where do you put Tom Cruise?
Ty Detmer.
Really?
And I'm not talking about, I'm not talking here about acting ability, okay? Right?
Then, but he's an actor. What else are we supposed to judge him on?
No, I'm talking about pure movie awesomeness. Let me give you the list, okay? Let me give you the list.
Okay.
Are you right? You ready?
Yeah.
He has been in his career an actor in, I think, 42 films, either in production or in the theater, okay?
Okay, I'm assuming you're staring at his IMDb profile. Right?
Well, what else would I be doing? Okay, Mission Impossible franchise. One of the greatest film franchises of our life. I think that's fair, right?
It's pretty good.
It's pretty awesome. Have you seen Rogue Nation?
No.
Of course you haven't. You don't see movies. But if you do, when you do, it's awesome. Edge of Tomorrow in 2014. By the way, I think one of the most underrated films of all time. Fantastic movie. Okay, I'm just going to talk about the awesome ones. There are obviously some that are not. Okay, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, loved it. Night and Day, which I had not seen and recently saw, hilarious. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Mission Impossible 3 was awesome. War of the Worlds, not so much. Last Samurai, fantastic. It's basically like all of his other movies, but he's trained by samurais. Minority Report, Mission Impossible 2, Jerry Maguire, the original Mission Impossible, The Firm, where I think he has the greatest running scene of all of his running scenes, but that's a different debate. A Few Good Men. Do you have any objection to that?
I love that movie.
Yeah,
I'm not going to lie to you.
That's a fantastic movie. Born on the 4th of July, Rain Man, Top Gun, and then he was Risky Business, obviously. He was not a major character, but I did recently rewatch excellent film, The Outsiders. You know, top that list. Top it. Who can top it? Hanks, maybe.
Yeah, that's where I would have gone. I would have gone with Tom Hanks.
But, okay, so your argument would be he's the second greatest movie star of our lifetime.
What about
who? Brad Pitt?
I'm searching. I'm searching. There's gotta be somebody, please. There's someone. What about Matt Damon? I'd take Matt Damon over Tom Cruise.
Stop it.
Oh, come on.
I love Damon. You cannot take Matt Damon over Tom Cruise. Now
okay, I take the Bourne series over Mission Impossible.
That's close for me, but probably yes. Okay.
And Matt Damon, I feel like Matt Damon, he's shown some versatility. He's shown a little, you know, The Informant.
Really?
The whole Ocean series. The Departed.
He's a sub-character in the Ocean series.
But he does a good job.
So what? That's not the same. I left out Cruise's sub-characters. Oh, that's right. He doesn't do sub-characters.
Goodwill Hunting?
Goodwill Hunting is fantastic. And he wrote
Saving
it,
Private but Ryan, but that's more of a Tom Cruise movie.
You mean Tom Hanks?
I said Tom Hanks.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man. It's not even close. Damon's not close.
Matt
and I
Damon
love Damon.
Has a credit as a baseball fan at Fenway Park in Field of Dreams?
I did that's not know that. That's pretty yeah. crazy. He also has a credit on Mystic Pizza.
I'd forgotten that one.
Yeah, probably because you never saw it. He's got some great movies. Rainmaker is great. Let's see. Man, he's also made some just total, I mean, but everybody has. Everybody's got some terrible movies in there. But no, I'm sorry. I love Matt Damon. Not close.
What about Leonardo DiCaprio?
Stop it. Stop it. DiCaprio, really? You think DiCaprio? You'd rather go see a DiCaprio movie than a Tom Cruise movie.
Depending on the movie.
You're killing me. You're just arguing to argue. What's your
I'm
favorite?
I'm arguing because I can't live with the fact that Tom Cruise is ranked that highly on the list.
Favorite Leonardo DiCaprio movie. And if you say Titanic, this podcast is over. And I don't mean this episode. I mean the podcast is done. We are finished.
Favorite Leonardo DiCaprio movie, Inception.
Okay, you got there pretty quick.
Catch Me If You Can is pretty good.
Yeah, I like that one. I have never seen this, but my favorite might be The Departed, though I can... That's a movie you only watch once, if you did. I have never seen it. It's
right, of course you've not.
I've never seen it. But if I had seen it, that might be my favorite of his. That or his Time on Growing Pains.
The Time on Growing Pains is pretty good.
You know, DiCaprio's got a good list, but it's not Tom Cruise worthy. It's not Tom Hanks worthy.
It's not Tom Cruise worthy.
Inception, The Departed. I mean, he's got some very good movies in here. Catch Me If You Can, as you mentioned, Gangs of New York. Again, haven't seen it, but if I had, it's fantastic. Another person I put up, totally different kind of actor, though. I just rewatched for like the thousandth time, Last of the Mohicans. So, but Daniel Day-Lewis he's not a box office guy, right? He's a actor. You have to say it that way.
Is that the way you have to say it?
You have to when you're talking about Daniel Day-Lewis.
So why did it take them so long to cast Daniel Day-Lewis as Abraham Lincoln? Were they just waiting for him to age?
I think so.
Because the resemblance is absurd.
It is absurd. Have you seen Lincoln?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really good. And he's very good in it.
It's like they got the actual Lincoln.
Yes.
Not that I really have any frame of reference for that, because I never met Abraham Lincoln in the flesh, obviously. But... anyway.
All right. Well, we've wasted 7 minutes of everybody's time, so let's move on to like Cougar stuff.
All right.
So Cougars.com, Cougars.com. You can go to BYUCougars.com. That's a good site too, but
Go to Cougars.com. I can't vouch for what's on that website. I have not looked.
Yeah, it could be very different. So next segment, Matt, is the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
BYU women's soccer beat Cal in Hawaii, by the way. Unfortunately, weather rained out the second game they were supposed to play in Hawaii against Stanford, though that's been scheduled for, I believe, September, rescheduled for September 5th in California. They play Colorado-Nebraska this weekend. They are now ranked number 11 after the 2-0 thumping of Cal. And you know, I love when the Cougars beat Cal.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, so and Stanford. So I would have really liked them to beat both of them in the same weekend. Would have made me very, very happy.
Well, you'll just have to wait for September 7th, my friend.
But I'll tell you, this team is loaded. They're ranked number 11, and I'm going to be catching some of their games on BYU TV. No doubt about it.
Soccer's a fun game to watch when it's played well.
Yeah, Friday night they're hosting home opener against Colorado.
Free hot dogs. Hey, everybody, free hot dogs coming up.
Is that true?
I think that's the Friday night game.
I may
Science
have to...
Bank is giving away t-shirts to the first 2,500 fans, and the first 800 students to show their ID will receive free hot dogs.
I wonder if this old BYU student ID I have would still work.
First of all, I don't think the IDs look the same as they did when you were there. Secondly,
really?
You don't look anything like the picture on your ID, and they will not believe it's you.
I'm not sure that's totally true. I mean,
it's definitely true for me.
Besides the 50 pounds I've gained and all the white hair, I look exactly the same.
Go ahead. You're just going to go ahead and call it white hair?
White.
You got some salt. It's salt and pepper. You got a little bit of salt.
It's white. It's not gray. It's white. It's like stark white. Isn't it?
I don't know. Did like somebody scare you or something? I don't know what happened.
No, my sister, I watched three young girls this weekend. I was about to make a Frozen reference. Somebody help me. Somebody help me. Throw me
the wheels have come off.
We're
making Frozen jokes, everybody.
Yeah. I was going to say my sister hit me with magic to my head or something. Gosh, man, we are so far off the rails on this one. So, Matt, next story, Cougars in the News. BYU men's basketball team goes to Spain, beats up on some Spanish teams, and I mean that figuratively, not literally. Matt, the news really is the performance of the big guys, including Davis and Ates. This is going to be a different team this year.
Oh, yeah, and it's exciting to hear, right? That was the big problem.
Yes.
Was the absence of good play from the big guys. And I think that we've always had an idea that these guys could play, but it's good to finally have a chance to see them out there strutting their stuff. There is some question as to the quality of these opponents.
Right, right.
I think other than the play of the big men, I think my second favorite thing coming out of the Spain trip was the number of pictures I got to see in those sweet jerseys.
Yeah.
Those things are awesome. I want one.
Yes, I also thought the exact same thing. I would like one of those. And obviously, a great play from Chase Fisher and Kyle Collinsworth, which is to be expected. Matt, Robert and I plays with fire. If you have not seen the video of Robert and I doing the fire dance, go watch it now. That's all I have to say.
The best was when a reporter asked him about juggling a torch or however the reporter said it, and he said something like, that's a fire knife. It's not a torch.
Anai's interviews are watching them. I don't care who's talking to him. I always, if there's a video of the interview, I have to watch it.
Oh, it's awesome.
The disdain that he pours out on some of those reporters is off the charts hilarious.
That's great.
I never get sick of it. Kyle Van Ooy in the bad news department, Matt, he's hurt again, and it looks like it might be for a while. This just is terrible. I mean,
yeah, that's bad news.
This could, in theory, derail his career. Doesn't necessarily mean it will if he misses significant time. It's just every year there's new young guys looking for your job, and the NFL is cutthroat as it gets in professional sports. So hoping for health for Kyle Van Ooy and a quick return to the field. Matt, let's move on to fall camp. A couple of stories that we had not fully talked about, though obviously the first one, running backs, we have talked about a bit. There's a story in the Tribune yesterday, or maybe it was today, about basically what we had said a couple weeks ago. This is going to be a committee, a running back by committee. Do you believe that's going to be the case?
I do. Until one of these guys sets themselves apart, I don't see any reason not to do it that way. At least you're getting fresh legs. You can rotate guys in and out, take advantage of their individual strengths, and do those types of things. In this type of a situation, I don't see that you have really much of another choice.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, lots of good stories. Hine looks better. Algie lost, thinned down to be more of a, tailback kind of guy. And those stories are great. But in the end, every year in fall camp, there are stories about this person has improved. And sometimes it's true, and sometimes it's not once they get between the tackles. So we shall see. And like you said, if somebody doesn't distinguish themselves, there's going to be a lot of different guys getting carries. Another story out of the Deseret News, Matt, was they've got two scholarships now here in August that they can give out. Juergens is likely to get one. Nate Carter, the running back, might be the other one. Matt, what is... you look back at BYU history, there have been quite a few walk-ons that have been important players. Chad Lewis is maybe the most famous of that group. What do you think it means to the program to have guys like Juergens and Carter who, here they are walk-ons, but their senior year they get a scholarship, and in both cases probably are an important part of the offense?
Well, I think as far as the program goes, it says something about the culture, right? When you get guys that are willing to put the time in, play on that kind of a level, and play that type of a role for the team. I think it's important to have guys that can do that in those roles that are good enough to step in and play when you need them to, say like a Carter situation from last year. So I think that's real positive. And I think it's great for these guys, right? I mean, you go in there, you work hard, you're making some extra sacrifices for years, and you get that to pay off at the end. I mean, that's got to feel pretty good from an individual standpoint. So congratulations to them or whoever else.
Whoever ends up getting those scholarships.
Ends up getting it. But doesn't it sound like those are the guys?
Juergens for sure. I think Carter... is likely as well. There's a couple other walk-ons that in theory could get it, but they in that article, those were the two they pointed at, and I seem to think that's probably likely, Matt. So anyway, Matt, today we are doing our season preview extravaganza.
Extravaganza.
So, Matt, we're going to start off talking Taysom Hill because why not? He's awesome. So let's talk about Taysom. There was an article in AthlonSports.com written by Mitch Harper, who I think most BYU fans are probably familiar from his work on the Cougar Center podcast and now radio show. He talks about, you know, kind of what are Taysom Hill's chances to win the Heisman Trophy. You'll notice right now at this point, he is not on most of the short lists. Like, he's on bigger lists if people have like 20 or whatever. But if they're doing like the five most likely, you're not seeing his name pop up very much. What does Taysom need for an invite to New York to happen? Forget about winning the whole Heisman Trophy, but to be one of those finalists that gets the invite, what would have to happen in your mind for that to play out?
Beyond like 10 wins or something crazy like that?
Yes.
Or I guess something crazy, but something team-oriented?
No, team-oriented and individual both, because, I mean, I think voters, you know, if BYU, like, wins 8 games, but he puts up big numbers, he's not going to New York, right?
Right.
So 10 wins, what else? I mean, the numbers have got to be what? Still 1,000 yards rushing and 3,500 yards passing? Is that even enough?
That might be enough if he gets all three of those things.
Right.
You know, if he gets into a good win total, what did you say, 3,500 yards in the air, yeah, and 1,000 yards rushing?
Yeah, he 2 years ago he was a little under 3,000 yards passing, so I'm assuming he would need more than that, so I picked 3,500. And then he rushed for 1,400 yards 2 years ago, which, you know, I mean, any quarterback when they're over 1,000 yards, that's a eye-popping number. So I don't know.
What does he need for touchdowns? 25 touchdowns? Touchdowns?
He needs to be a touchdown machine throwing and running. I mean, those numbers will make things. Obviously, being on ESPN, if they do well early in the season and that means they get more games on ESPN later in the year, some of those games picked up against lesser opponents, I think that helps too. You know, the voters get to see him on TV. And he needs a defining moment like he had against Texas last year. You know, being on like the Sports Center top 10 plays because he hurdles some Missouri defender in November would, you know, that could be huge, right?
Yeah, and what I was about to say is as far as the Heisman campaign is concerned, that Missouri game may be the most important one.
Yeah.
You know, if we get into that situation where the team's got a good record, he's on pace with some of the numbers, he'll be in those discussions, and that would be the game right there he would need to perform well in order to set himself apart. You know, a Texas-like performance in one of these early games, you know, say this first month of the season, would be really good, but by the time you get to the end of the season, that's reaching pretty far back as far as, you know, the voters' memories are concerned. So that Missouri game is really the one, from a Heisman Trophy standpoint, that you should circle on the calendar and say, you want to get invited to New York? You've got to light up that Missouri defense.
Yeah, yeah. Say they have two losses going into that game, and then say he puts on a show against Missouri, he could be in that conversation. Absolutely. Yeah,
that's an important game.
But I'll say there are a lot of good players out there, and there are some teams that obviously are going to get more publicity than BYU. I still say he's a long shot to get to New York.
Yeah, I agree with that. He is a long shot to get to New York. But I think that's something that comes along with if the team was able to turn this into a special season, I think they can create that opportunity for him.
All right, Matt. So we're going to do a little over-under, which we always do. But this time we're going to do something a little different. We're going to keep track of it. I got a spreadsheet open.
Keep track?
Yes. We're going to actually go back and see if we were full of crap.
You're going to hold me accountable for this stuff?
I'm holding you accountable, brother.
I don't know what to do with that. Accountability on the podcast?
Well, if it's really bad, we just will never visit it again.
Yeah, that's okay. Okay, I feel better then. Because. Okay.
All right. All right, so we're going to start off in Taysom territory, Matt.
All right.
3,200 yards passing over or under for Taysom Hill.
Taking the over, baby.
I am also taking the over, so noted in the Google Docs spreadsheet.
Yeah, all right. Taking the over. Blue the goggles. Over.
Taysom Hill, 1,100 yards rushing.
Ooh.
Stop it. It's over.
Yeah.
Come on.
We're taking the over.
Come on. Of course it's over. This would be, I think this would be a serious discussion if Jamal was healthy.
Yeah. Or was available.
Sorry, available. Yes. If Jamal was available, I think this would be a big deal. Hey, you know who we didn't mention when we were talking, going back a little bit on the walk-ons, was obviously the quarterback that took the most snaps last year. Senior Stewart.
Yep.
He had did a great job. So, Matt.
And back for spring ball.
Total touchdowns for Taysom Hill. 2 years ago, he totaled 10 on the ground, 19 passing. Over under for Taysom Hill, 32 total touchdowns.
Over. It's going to be the Taysom Hill show, man.
I am going to put under. I'm going to put under, but just barely. But you're doing over. We need some differentiation so one of us can win at the end of the year.
Right.
All right, Matt. Last year, Mitch Matthews was shy of 1,000 yards. He had 900-something odd yards and I think 75 receptions. Over under 1,000 yards receiving for Mitch Matthews.
I'm going to go under.
I am also going to go under for two reasons. Number one, I think Kurtz is going to put up some big numbers this year. Number two, I think I'm a little worried about his health. You know, he didn't play in fall camp, and I know they're not making a big deal of it, but that always makes me a little nervous when they don't play much in fall camp. So speaking of Kurtz, Matt, over under 70 receptions for Kurtz.
I'm going to go with under. But I think it's close.
I'm going to go with the over. I think he will be the leading receiver, both receptions and yards, for the Cougars in 2015. Bold prediction. That's right.
Look at you.
Look at me.
Stepping out there.
I set this up earlier, but I'm going to go down a little bit. Any BYU running back rushing for more than 700 yards, over under 700 yards for any individual BYU running back?
No.
Under. You're doing under. I'm going to do over.
This is the over under is 0.5 is the number of running backs that rush for over 700 yards?
Correct.
Yeah, I'm taking the under.
I am taking the over. I think one running back will do so. Matt, Corbin Kaufusi.
You really think a running back is going to do that?
Yes, and his name is Nate Carter.
Really?
I think he emerges as the guy. Not in the offense. Obviously, it's still Taysom. But I just see him. And in the end, maybe he doesn't get 700 yards, and I'm wrong on this, but he ends up getting a bunch of receiving yards, too. I like his speed, and I like, you know, Taysom Hill is our short yardage running back. Is there any doubt at this now? Unless one of these guys really emerges, he is your guy that's going to be in the red zone running the ball. I like Carter between the 20s getting the ball a lot. We'll see. I could be totally wrong.
All right.
Corbin Kaufusi is not on the football team, but his brother Bronson is. He career high 7 sacks, Matt. 6 over under 6.5 sacks for Kaufusi in 2015.
Over under at 6.5?
Yes. His career high is 7.
I'm going to go with over.
I am also going with over. Big year. I think the linebacker core is going to be greatly improved. And I think that will free him up for more sacks. I think last year they were able to spend too much time planning for him. So I'm also taking the over. Last year, Matt, Sky Pove, which we discussed, I believe this last time, led the team with 78 total tackles. That is not a groundbreaking number, by the way. The highest linebacker was Zach Stout with 62. And then it was another defensive back, Craig Bills, third on the team in total tackles with 50. Matt, over under any defender on BYU's team amassing 85 tackles. Over under 85 tackles for under. Any one defender.
I'm going with the under.
I am going with the over. And his name is Harvey Lange.
Really?
Another bold prediction. Middle linebacker.
You're getting crazy on us now. That's defense, just crazy talk,
yeah,
man.
It's not crazy talk. We've had a lot of linebackers do better than 85 tackles. Right?
Right, I mean, out of the gate, though. I mean, look at you.
Hey, this is an extravaganza. I'm not holding back, man. I mean, Onga the year before had 143. Right? I mean, if this defense works how it's supposed to be, and you're funneling everything to the middle, if Warner plays well, Kafusi's playing well, it'll go up the middle, and he will get a bunch of tackles. I think 90-something tackles, even. How's that? For exactness.
Wow.
All right, last year, Matt, I moved back a season, so let me pull up again the 2014. Last year, BYU's defense gave up, this is numbers high, 28.5 points per game. This year, over under BYU defense, 23.5 points per game.
Over.
I'm also going to go over, but I think it's just
that's
over.
That's going to be close.
And I think they will be saved a lot by smashing some mediocre Mountain West and American Conference teams in the middle of the schedule.
Yeah.
Last year, the BYU defense gave up an average of 4.93 yards per play. Not good, by the way, for those of you scoring at home. Over under 4.75 yards per play for the BYU defense in 2015.
I'm going with the under, baby.
I am going with the over, but just slightly. Just slightly. But I think they will be greatly improved from last year. But I still think it's going to be... it'll go from being a mediocre to bad defense to being a mediocre to good defense. Fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think they're going to be closer to good than mediocre.
Okay, that's good. All right. So, Matt, it's time for what we love to do. Well, we love to do a lot of things, but we like to go game by game and boldly predict BYU winning or not winning, right? And we do it a little differently. We give percent chance we believe they will win. Okay? Percent chance we believe they will win. We will start and we will just go down the schedule by opponent. Are you ready, Matt?
Let's do it.
And I am also putting this in the spreadsheet. First up on the schedule, of course, is we're traveling to Lincoln to play the Cornhuskers. Last year, the Cornhuskers were 9-4. Their losses were at Michigan State, at Wisconsin, Minnesota at home, and then USC in the bowl game in a tight one. 9-4 last year. I'm using a lot of information from FB Nations. Excellent previews. Friend of the podcast, Bill Connolly, did a lot of these. And their ranking last year, according to Football Outsiders, their S&P Plus ranking was 30th. This year, in the preseason ranking, they are 28th. BYU, by the way, is 32nd in that preseason ranking. Percent chance, Matt, BYU wins at Nebraska in the opener.
70%.
70%. I'm going to do 65%.
Yeah.
So we're both predicting a fairly comfortable win, despite the fact that, of course, a lot of prognosticators now are probably thinking Nebraska, especially at home. But we're homers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually have my BYU Sports Nation blue goggles, and I'm putting them. Oh my gosh, 95%.
Oh boy,
against everyone.
Against all of the teams.
Yes. So then the home opener is Boise State. Obviously, we're all pretty familiar with Boise State, but last year, my computer is apparently very slow today. Last year, they had two losses, the opener to Ole Miss, and then, of course, a heartbreaker to Air Force, which kind of sunk their season a little bit. very young team. Then they went and ran the table, including the bowl game win over Arizona. Preseason, Football Outsiders has them as the 26th best team, so six spots better than BYU. Obviously, Boise State handled the Cougars pretty well last year. Percent chance on that one. Are you calling it a win or a loss, Matt?
I'm saying 50.
That is absolute chicken stuff.
Yeah, 50-50, baby.
I'm saying 45%. I think we're
I'm
going
right
to
either
this.
Way.
Yeah, I know. You're a wimp. Wimp.
I really am. I really am a wimp.
You are a wimp. So, Matt, the next team up is UCLA. Last year, of course, they were one of the better teams in the country. Man, my computer is super slow, which the listeners really care about.
Slow like dirt.
Seventh ranked. They finished seventh in Football Outsiders ranking. They were 10-3. They had losses against Utah, boo, Oregon, and Stanford. Oh my gosh, they lost to like my three least favorite teams in America. Was San Diego State not available to lose to? Oy. Boy, you're killing me here, UCLA. In the preseason, Football Outsiders has them as the ninth best team, 23 spots above BYU. Percent chance that the Cougars go into the Rose Bowl and beat the Bruins?
You know, I'm not real bullish on this one.
Okay. Are you going to give a number? Or are you...
35%.
I'm going to do 40%, but I'm also not very bullish. I think UCLA is a little overrated, but I think there's a very good chance they're still the best team we end up playing this year.
Well, the thing with UCLA is they're starting a freshman quarterback.
Yes, and that's a big like if. Now, Boise State also it will be breaking in some new position players too. So, but yeah, freshman quarterback maybe is awesome. Maybe by midway through the season they're playing somebody else.
Yep.
So we'll see if it's Jerry Neuheisel or Josh Rosen by the time BYU's playing them in week three. So, Matt, the next game up, of course, is another road game to another classic venue. That's against the Jim Harbaugh University, also known as Michigan. Last year, they
were... The Fighting Khakis.
Yes, last year they were not good. They got beat up pretty heavily by a lot of teams, including Utah again. And that's why you don't ever hire a coach who's coming out of San Diego State. So this year, though, people are very optimistic. They have them, Football Outsiders has them as the 29th best team preseason, a few slots higher than BYU. Matt, before we get to the percentage, do you believe in year one of Jim Harbaugh there's going to be a big turnaround?
Nope.
I mean, last year they were 5-7. And had some ugly losses, including getting shut out against what ended up being a not great Notre Dame team. Good Notre Dame team, but not great. Utah, Minnesota was a pretty good team. Rutgers, not a good team. Michigan State, obviously, was a top 10 type of team. And then, of course, Ohio State was good, but they also lost to Maryland. I mean, there's some ugly, ugly losses there. Well, I mean, do you give them over under 8.5 wins for Michigan in 2015?
I'm taking the under.
That's about right where it would be. I'm also going to take the under. I think looking at their schedule, they got a lot of tough games, including a 65% chance of losing to the Cougars.
Yeah!
How about
65%?
You?
65%! I'm going to match you at 65%.
That's... You're going to copy
it. That's what I had.
Really?
I don't know what to tell you. It's what I, it's
that's
what I had.
You had written down. Though. All right. Matt, next up on the schedule will be UConn. And if we were playing them in basketball or lacrosse, I might be frightened. But we're playing them in football, and they're not very good at football. So last year, they were ranked by Football Outsiders the 119th best team in FBS. They were 2-10. So we're not going to talk about all their losses because we'd be here all day. There were two wins, Matt. Stony Brook and a decent Central Florida team. They had losses against Army, South Florida, and Tulane. Oh, and SMU. I'm sorry. Don't forget losing to maybe the only team, one of the only teams worse than them in college football.
That's unfortunate.
Yes. And by the way, where is this game being played? Lavelle Edwards Stadium. Percent chance, I'm doing 95.
I'm going to go with 85.
Okay. So you're being probably a little bit more pragmatic.
But I think the Huskies come into this game with a 1-3 record.
They won't be doing well.
I think they'll beat Nova. They'll beat Villanova.
I would hope so. If they come in 0-4, I give it a 99% chance.
But I think that, you know what, they got Army, Navy, and Mizzou. Ugh. They're not beating Mizzou.
They'll be lucky in the first quarter to stay within 3 touchdowns of Mizzou. The next week, though, is a much better American Conference opponent. That's East Carolina, Matt. I think BYU fans, this is a game. This, to me, is a major trap game, if such a thing does exist. Last year, Football Outsiders had them as the 61st best team, 8-5. Preseason, they have them as much better as the 34th best team, so about the same as us. When you look at what their biggest strengths should be, difficult to run against East Carolina. They've got a stout run defense. They did replace their quarterback and their offensive coordinator. And of course, it's hard to know what will happen. Matt, percent chance in Provo that BYU beats the Pirates.
In Provo, I'm going to go with 80% chance here. News coming out today out of Greenville, North Carolina, is that the guy they had named as their starting quarterback is out for the season with a knee injury.
Oh, I didn't see that news. Just broke news on the podcast.
Yeah, well, this is according to ESPN.com. But anyway, I think East Carolina is going to struggle in this game on the road.
I'm also going to do 80%. So you and I are right on with each other there. Cincinnati. Now, this game, hopefully nobody's sleeping on Cincinnati. Let's talk a little bit about the
Bearcats.
Yeah, we've
got to be smarter than that.
Yes, we definitely need to be smarter than that. They were 9-4 last year. They as the 47th best team. For the preseason, though, our friend Bill Connolly has them as the 8th best team. The 40th best team. So about us, 8 spots lower than us, but a good team. And besides Missouri, I think the most likely loss in the back half of the BYU schedule. Matt, some of their strengths, Gunnar Kiel is coming back and all of his receiving weapons. Their defense, though, is probably not great coming out. Last year, obviously, they had some tough losses against some pretty good teams, Ohio State, Memphis. That's probably their worst loss last year. Percent chance that BYU beats Cincinnati in Provo?
I'm going to go with 65%.
I am also at 65%. We are being copycats today.
Why?
I don't know.
Did you look at my list?
Wagner, can we both say 100%?
Hold on, before we leave Cincinnati, though, I do have a question. Are we going to discuss the Bearcats as a mascot at all?
I don't.
Or we're just going to leave that one alone tonight?
I'm not understanding, because it sounds like they mated a bear and a cat together. Is that what
you totally said? Made it. You said it that time on purpose. Don't give me this.
No, I just said
it. You said it that time on purpose.
I just said mated again.
Oh my gosh, you're still saying it.
And
now you're just messing with my head.
You and half our listenership can't listen properly.
Listenership? Listenership?
Okay, listen.
Whatever.
What do you
you're
want
saying
to?
Made it. Everybody knows that's what you're
Mated.
Saying. That's all I needed to know.
M-A-T-E-D. And I am just assuming at some point this will get out and I'm going to get a lot of hate mail from Bearcats. But, you know, how many
Bearcats do Bearcats don't have email? They don't even have opposable thumbs.
Well, and how vicious are they? I mean, are they going to rip your face off? Or are they going to, sit there and purr? I don't know.
I don't know.
Honestly, I don't know. We'll have to Google that.
Do they hunt like really large mice? I don't know how that works.
What's that guy that went to Norwell High? That's the animal expert. our high school. Jeff Corwin.
There you go.
Animal Planet guy. He went ahead of both you and I several years, was at our same high school in Norwell, Massachusetts. Maybe we'll have him on the podcast to discuss Bearcats and what they really are.
Oh, my goodness. I just Googled Bearcat.
Okay. Is it pictures of like a cat with a bear head?
It redirects to an animal called the Benturong.
The Benturong.
The Benturong, also known as a bear cat, is a vivid native to South and Southeast Asia.
Wow. Why is Cincinnati the Benturongs?
In Indonesia, it's also known as the Tenturon.
Can we just call them the Benturongs from now on?
Is that official? They are confined to tall forests. They're
ugly
weird
animals based on
They are
Google.
Weird looking.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out and get a bear cat house pet.
They're omnivores. Well, that's nice.
Great, they're omnivores. All right, can we move on to Wagner and basically say 100% chance we beat Wagner?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, good. Moving on from there. San Jose State, Matt. San Jose State. So they last year were not great either. 3-9 and the 116th best team according to Football Outsiders. They had losses against stalwart teams like Navy, Fresno State. They got shut out by Hawaii at home, by the way, and then got pounded by Utah State and San Diego State to end the year. Matt, percent chance that BYU beats San Jose State. This is a road game, though I don't think it matters much.
I'm going to go with 90%.
I am going to go with 95%.
Yeah, up in the ante.
Yes, I am. All right, Missouri, Matt. So Missouri, interesting. We had Bill Connolly on the program earlier this summer. Besides being, kind of a guru of college football, he also happens to be a Mizzou guy. So I talked to him a little bit on the podcast about that game. He does not believe they'll win the SEC East this year, as they have the past couple of years. Of course, he predicted that the last 2 years as well. The advanced metrics don't like them as much as well as they have performed. But obviously last year they had a very good season, 11-3, the losses being an inexplicable loss against Indiana. And then obviously they got beat by two of the best teams in the country, but pounded by Georgia and Alabama, and then beat Minnesota in their bowl game. Matt, either them or UCLA is probably going to end up being, all due respect to Boise State, the best teams we play in the 2015 season. This one is obviously a neutral site, and I'm using air quotes on this one. Their biggest thing is their defensive line is not supposed to be great. They will be young, and as will their wide receivers, though potentially very talented young wide receivers. Matt, they're only 27th preseason. Percent chance we beat Mizzou in Kansas City.
I'm going with 45%.
45%. So you think it is less likely that we beat Missouri than than Boise State?
That's correct.
But more likely than UCLA. That's what you're saying.
More likely? No, I said 50-50 on Boise State.
Yeah, so it's... Oh, you did say that. Never mind.
Yeah, so I think we got a better chance of beating Boise State, but not by a ton.
But not by a ton. How about this? I'm doing 55%.
Yeah, got blue goggles on.
I've got the blue goggles. Here's the thing. I don't think... I think us and Missouri are pretty close. I think by that point, if Taysom is healthy and the offense is rolling, I think it's going to be almost impossible to stop us. And I don't think they have the defense. If we were playing, say, Bama or somebody with a, top 10 defense, I would say, well, that, you're going to run into a wall. But Missouri is not that team. So then, of course, we finish with two Mountain West opponents, Fresno State. This is not the Fresno State that they used to have. 6-8 last year, and that's probably makes it sound better than they are. They got absolutely killed by basically any good team they played last year, and beat by some not good teams they played last year, including UNLV and Wyoming, and they can't blame it on a trip to Laramie. Matt, percent chance we beat Fresno State?
90%.
And that is a home game, by the way. I'm going to go even higher. I'm going to go 95, which is my favorite percent against these Mountain West teams. And you go 90%. Okay. Last game of the season, Utah State, a chance for the good news is, Matt, it's the last game on the schedule. So when Taysom Hill gets his season-ending injury against Utah State, they'll only be that game and the bowl game left. Sorry. Is that not funny?
That's not even a little bit funny.
So this Matt, is Utah State is maybe, I don't know if they're going to be as good as they have been last year. I think they weren't as good as they had been the previous couple years before that. That being said, it could be the reunion game of, you know, Chucky Keaton and Taysom Hill. So what do we think, Matt? Percent chance? Last year they finished 10-4, but they didn't beat. What's their best win last year? Their best win was us. So they didn't obviously lost to Tennessee, Colorado State, and got handled pretty heavily against Boise. Before we get to the percent chance, Matt, is this officially a rivalry game?
Yeah, I think it is.
You have to call it that, right?
I mean, that's what it is.
I know BYU fans don't like to consider it a rivalry, and they still think of Utah State as that terrible team in the North, but they haven't been that team in almost a decade. So
right.
It's time to call a rivalry and to respect the program that Utah State has built. It's fair, right?
I think it's fair.
Percent chance, though, Matt, that they come into Provo and we beat them.
I believe that we have 75% chance of beating them.
I will go with a 70% chance. I'm a little less confident than you. But yes, I think it is very much likely that we do. Okay.
I think they have a really hard time with a healthy Taysom.
Yes. I think that is fair. So Matt, as we go down the line, okay, in our favorite little game here, you predict a win against Nebraska. So do I. You predict a win or a loss against Boise State. I'm going to make you get off the fence with your 50%. Win or a loss?
Loss.
I'm saying loss. You are also saying loss. So I am changing you to 0.49%.
0.49% or just 49%?
49%. 0.49 in my little spreadsheet.
Make sure we're clear.
UCLA, we're predicting a loss. Michigan, we are both predicting a win. So we're saying that killer September, we're coming out 2-2.
Yep.
UConn, obviously, we're both predicting a win. East Carolina, Cincinnati, and the official conference USA, I was going to say, American Conference part of the schedule, Wagner, San Jose State. So we're saying that coming into that game, we're both predicting a 6-game win streak coming into Mizzou. I am predicting a win. You are predicting a loss because you hate BYU football. And Fresno State, we're both saying victories as well as Utah State. So if we do our little totals, let's see here. I am totaling up the spreadsheet. This is very exciting. Everyone.
Just hit F9. Just F9. Do it.
I am saying 10 wins. You are saying 9 wins, Matt. So do you feel good with a 9-3 prediction?
I feel good about it as a prediction.
Yes. You think that's where we end up?
Yep.
If we lose 4 games this year, is that a failure of a season if we're 8-4? We've talked about this before, but
it's not a failure of a season. I mean, it's a decently tough schedule. It's not the toughest schedule we've ever played.
No. It won't go down as that because it depends, right, on how good these teams. If we're all wrong and Jim Harbaugh has this massive effect in their top 10 team and UCLA is a top 10 team and Missouri ends up being maybe a top 15 team, then it might be the toughest schedule. But that's a lot of Fs, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of people turning things around in different ways really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, but I think an 8-4 season says this is a team that had some opportunities to do something special, was not able to do that. They won the games they were supposed to win, and they didn't upset anybody.
So if I'm right and we're 10-2 and lose to Boise State and UCLA in September and then run the table till the bowl game, that's a special season, isn't it?
That's a fun season.
I mean, it may not go down as a top 10 BYU season ever.
I think you're a top 25 team.
You're a top 25 team at the end of the year? Yes. I believe that you are, especially if Missouri is a ranked team in November.
Yeah.
And you beat them. And it could, as we said, I still think it's an outside shot, put Taysom in New York. And could set up, if things break right, Las Vegas Bowl showdown with Utah.
That would be pretty awesome.
Would that be awesome way to send out Taysom?
Oh, that would be the best.
So forget about Utah for a second. Which bowl game would you rather play in?
It's all about opponents for me. I don't know that I really have an opinion.
You really don't care if we're in Hawaii or Vegas?
Nope. I'm not going to travel to either of those.
Right.
So I don't care.
Yeah, I don't really care. I mean, the Hawaii games always just kind of scare me, whether you're playing Hawaii or anybody else there, just because I think the travel can mess things up. That being said, I don't really care that much where they'd end up. I'm with you. If there's a match against Utah to be had in Vegas, but that'll depend on where they end up in the Pac-12 standings, right?
Yep.
If they end up in the Vegas Bowl, that probably means they didn't have the season they were hoping for, which plays right into us beating them at the end.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. It's opponent. And quite frankly, likely we're not going to have maybe even our it may not be the fourth best opponent on our schedule, depending on who it is at the end of the year.
That's correct.
So it's not like we're going to have a bowl game against somebody where it ends up becoming one of the best games on the schedule. But if it's Utah, that changes it quite a bit, Matt.
That gives a whole another flavor to that bowl game.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, Matt, we are now technically less than 10 days away from BYU at Nebraska.
Whew.
On the scale of Riley Nelson to Ty Detmer, that, by the way, Todd, who we mentioned at the beginning of this, he is the one that gave us that scale, right?
I believe that's
Todd,
correct.
The originator of the scale. So, Matt, how excited are you for this football season? Just for Detmer. BYU. Forget about all of college football. I know you love all of it, but Detmer?
Oh, I'm at Detmer levels right now.
I think I'm at Bosco levels. I'm not quite to the Detmer level yet.
Oh, yeah. I've got stitches in my chin. I'm out there with slinging it around. I'm at Detmer level. I'm not really sure what that analogy means.
I don't have any idea what you just said, but I was agreeing to be a nice brother and co-host.
I appreciate that. I'm staring up at the wall at my framed Sports Illustrated cover with Ty Detmer on it, and I'm ready. I'm ready. Let's play some football. Let's do this.
Yeah, I am looking at my banner. That have you ever seen my banner? I got it. I think I got it in '85. It's got the 1984 schedule on it. It's one of those, you know, triangle banners. What do they call those?
A pennant?
A pennant, yes. Pennant. There's the word I was looking for. Have you ever seen that of mine?
I think I've seen that before.
Yeah, I've had it. I think I got it in '85. It is atrocious looking from a, like, design standpoint. It is definitely mid-'80s. But, you know, it commemorates that 1984 season. Now, neither of us are predicting a repeat of undefeated 1984. But, Matt, I don't want to say impossible, because obviously it's not impossible. Is that, you know, would you give a perfect season a better than 10% chance?
A perfect season?
Perfect season. We run the table.
Yeah. I haven't done the math out on this, but I'm going to go ahead and say yeah. Because I'm all excited now.
If I put on the blue goggles, I say yes. I give it a 95% chance we're undefeated. That's just dumb. I think it's around that, probably less than that. But it's certainly a – having Taysom Hill and that offense, I kind of feel like you're going to be in every game. You're never going to be out of a game with Taysom Hill and that offense going. And to me, that actually, you know, feeds the hype, right? You know, if you had a new QB this year. But the funny thing is when did we went undefeated, that was Robbie Bosco's first year as the quarterback, right?
That's right.
We, despite how good we were in 1983, I don't think prognosticators had us winning, you know, going undefeated in 1984. But it's evidence of how hard it is to go undefeated because we've done it a total of once.
It is not easy to do.
If we go 10-2 or 11-1 in that regular season, I think this will be a special season. It's 11-1. It's probably a top 10 all-time BYU season. Because that means, if you had just one loss, that means you beat Nebraska, Boise State, UCLA, Michigan, and Missouri, you beat four of those five teams. That would be a special season.
That would be a really special
season. So let's get out on Matt. Your boldest prediction for the 2015 season.
My boldest prediction for the 2015 season?
Yes.
Kaufusi gets more than 12 sacks.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
My boldest prediction, bold prediction, so that doesn't actually, we're not actually saying it's likely to happen. My boldest prediction, 100 receptions for Nick Kurtz.
That's insane.
Yeah, it doesn't even make any sense. But it might if BYU ends up becoming, I've seen a few tweets where people are saying, you know what, it might be a pass-first team this year. Because the strength is at the wide receivers, as opposed to in the backfield, with Jamal not being there. So I don't know. All right, well, this has been the Rise and Shout podcast, a long extra season preview extravaganza edition.
We put the extra in extravaganza.
Yes, we do. And next week we will have Darnell Dixon of the Daily Herald, who used to cover the Nebraska Cornhuskers and lived in Lincoln for a time, working there covering Nebraska sports. So we'll have him on next week to preview, Matt, an actual football game.
Oh, man. We're really into football now.
Detmer-level excitement, my friend. Detmer-level yes. excitement. So thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Go to CougarFan.com to get all your BYU Cougar news. When we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!